flipping a home, opening a successful business. People, are you ready? Meet your personal coach and trusted attorney, Andrew Leib.
Get ready for Leib on the Loose,
who will help you get started in building your real estate empire. Grow your self-confidence, find your grit, and get the skills needed to dominate the real estate world.
You're a player.
This is Real Estate Investing with Andrew Leib.
Real estate investing is about using other people's money. Today, we're bringing on the expert. Today's conversation is with the former person in charge, not someone that just worked there, the chief of the Real Estate Finance Bureau at the New York Attorney General's office. Her name is Erica Buckley. She's a practicing attorney, and we're going to be discussing with her today how you can raise money to buy real estate, to develop real estate, to do condos, to do co-ops, how you're supposed to do that the right way in the state of New York when you're getting partners, investors into your property. And what we're going to talk about is that even getting two partners, you could have to do filings in New York State, and not doing it, you can get restitution damages against you. You have to give the money back. You could get compensatory damages, the losses that they have. You could get penalized. She's going to talk about how you can get penalized $3,000 per unit you do the wrong way. We are so excited to teach you how to leverage other people's money, the Blue Sky Law, the Martin Act, real estate syndications. This is the Leibcast.
This segment has been brought to you by the Bryn Elliott team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate.
Lauren, I was on LoopNet and I was reading, you know, the listings, because I keep telling you that we got to get prepared for this real estate market. And I'm reading this listing. It was just on, and I'm reading this thing, and it's a multifamily property not far from us. And in the listing, it says the asking price is $438,000 with some change. But then they have this quote, and I read this quote. It says participation is available with 25% of the acquisition price. And I'm saying to myself, light bulbs go off. And I say to myself, these people are probably doing something naughty. And I say to myself, no one seems to listen to me when I tell them it's naughty. And as we've been discussing, we keep getting these calls because we're in a foreclosure moratorium. Like, there's not so many it's not happening. And everyone thinks this housing market is killer, killer, killer. They wait till this foreclosure happens. My smart investors, you know what they're listening to, Lauren? They're working right now to wait for the bottom to fall out, and then they're going to pounce. Well, I have news for you. On the show right now, I have the preeminent, the most impressive guest I could think of in this area. I'm so excited. Her name is Erica Buckley, and Erica wrote this article in the Law Journal, and I'm reading it. It's called Group of Friends Looking to Buy Condo Should Consider Syndicate Act First. And I said, duh. And so Erica wrote this article, and she knows how to make it make sense. I'm going to tell you why. She's the former chief at the Attorney General's office that dealt with real estate syndications. And I'm so excited. And right now she's a practicing attorney at Nixon Peabody. And if you don't know that firm, it's like the best.
Definitely one of the largest.
And so I am so happy to be friends with Erica now. And I brought her on the show because I want my audience to know how to do this right. I want my audience to know what they're doing, because we need to capitalize together on the future market, the chances we're going to have as time goes on. Without further ado, though, Erica, what is this syndicate thing all about, and why can't I just do development?
Yes, I know. It comes as a surprise to many that certain participation interests or investments in real estate are in fact regulated by the notorious Martin Act, which is New York's blue sky law that regulates the offered sale of real estate securities, which are very broad. When people think of the Martin Act and real estate securities, they think of the initial sale of co-ops and condos. And what many people overlook is that the Martin Act also regulates these participation interests and investments in real estate.
And Erica, in plain English, when you say it's regulated by the Martin Act, it's regulated by the Attorney General of the state of New York, who enforces the Martin Act, right?
Yes. And for those that aren't familiar with the Martin Act, it is New York's blue sky law. So it's very similar to the federal securities laws, and it is considered pretty much the most extreme securities law in the country. And we could have a whole segment on the powers of the Attorney General under the Martin Act. It is an incredibly powerful law. It's a disclosure statute. That's the other thing that every investor needs to realize. So when there's a requirement to file something with the Attorney General's office under the Martin Act, it's really mandating disclosure.
Well, let's talk disclosure, Erica. But before we even get there, I want everyone to hear what you're saying, because when I hear securities, I'm thinking to myself, I'm listening to Bloomberg, and I'm thinking, hey, the stocks, the bonds, I'm thinking, I know broker dealers, and you're telling me this is about real estate too. Can you make that hit home?
Yes, exactly. So again, the Martin Act is very much like the federal securities law, and it treats real estate just like federal securities are treated. There's a broker dealer registration requirement, and there's an offering plan prospectus filing requirement. The thing that's really unique about these real estate interests and investments in real estate is that there are a lot of exemptions, like short form filings, that are in fact available for groups that are looking to, you know, pool monies together, or, you know, the LoopNet posting that you're talking about. If somebody's, you know, soliciting investors, chances are they could, you know, hire somebody like me or another attorney that focuses on the Martin Act, and together they could figure out what is it that, you know, this promoter of this investment opportunity needs to do to steer clear of any issues that could arise in the future. And let me tell you, we could have a whole show on the powers of the Attorney General's office and what can happen if you don't take these initial steps to register your participation interest in real estate.
So I want to talk about the powers of the Attorney General office. I actually do want to get there, but let's start off with the basic simple things. You're telling me that normally people would have to file a prospectus, and then you say there's exemptions, but I don't even think people know what a prospectus is. What are we talking about?
Right. So I think that the type of prospectus or offering plan that most people in New York are very familiar with, if they're at all involved in real estate, is, let's say it's a developer that's building a new construction condominium. And I think everybody's pretty familiar with, hey, if you're buying a condominium unit in New York, you get this gigantic phone book.
It's huge.
It's huge, exactly. And it describes everything, not only just the purchase price and what your common charges are going to be. It provides you, you know, a lot of special risks, like this is something you need to consider before you purchase, and here are the governing docs, et cetera, et cetera. There's a similar requirement for participation interest in real estate. The difference is it's really a very esoteric area of law. And the thing is it's an active law in the books, and you never really know when it is that the Attorney General is really going to focus on it. And the reason why, you know, I recently wrote an article in the New York Law Journal about this, because I've been hearing of some situations where the Attorney General is becoming a little bit more interested in ensuring that certain investor groups are in fact doing this upfront filing requirement with the Attorney General.
Well, I want to get into that, but before we even do that, and you're saying it's an esoteric law, and I agree with you. And most people don't want to read even an offering plan when they're buying a condo or a co-op, which is insane, since it tells you how common charges are going to be paid. It tells you if there can be a Starbucks by your front door. Like, you're going to want to know these things. But let's just make it simple and hit home. I go about it, and I read your article. It says, group of friends looking to buy a condo should consider Syndicate Act first. I don't consider it. I say to myself, listen, Erica Schmerica and I get my group of friends, and we're going to do a condo because we watch HDTV and we know how to do these things. And so we go and we go do it. What is the power of the Attorney General? What's going to happen to me? Why do I care?
Here's why you care. Because, and this isn't just a hypothetical. This is something that has been happening. I've seen some instances of this happening over the past few years with co-housing groups and other types of intentional communities. And let's face it, one thing that this pandemic is also driving, in addition to, you know, you said this potential foreclosure crisis and, you know, investment frenzy, more and more people want to live in homes that they own. And so that's driving communities to want to come together and build these intentional communities in places like Long Island and upstate New York. Here is what I've seen happen, unfortunately. Group of people get together. I've got an instance of a group of 80, another one with a group of 15. They know each other. Some of them are quote unquote accredited investors because, you know, they're well-to-do. Some aren't. They pool their money. They find a contractor. Hey, help us build this project. They get their beautiful project built. And then they go and they hire somebody and they say, hey, we want to create a condo now. We want to create a co-op now.
Yeah.
They get somebody, presents, you know, no action letter request to the Attorney General's office to be able to just, you know, get permission to create their condo. And the AG is like, what are you talking about? How did this project get built? How did you pull your monies together? Did you do a filing? Did everybody know what they were investing their money in? Did you properly escrow funds? The answer, if it's no, that's a problem. Because again, the Martin Act is an incredibly powerful statute. The Attorney General has unbelievably broad investigatory powers, and they can really, they can look into this type of scenario because they want to ensure that, you know, your average person didn't get taken advantage of. Well, and even if that didn't happen, the AG could still really look into it, which is why doing these initial filings is really very important.
What happens when the AG looks into it? Like, what is that process?
So it can take a couple of different forms. You know, sometimes it can be as simple as, you know, the AG just asking for some background information. I've had one case where, you know, basically the scenario it describes happened where a group of people pooled their monies, built a project, didn't do any upfront filing. We spent about a year demonstrating to the AG that nothing bad happened. So I had to do a retroactive syndication filing. There are other cases where the AG is not really happy with what happened, and groups can be asked to sign what's called an assurance of discontinuance.
What does that mean?
It's a very serious document that the Attorney General essentially requires if they have launched an investigation and they have found that there was a potential violation or a violation of law, and they memorialize the terms of the investigation. They will make people admit that they've violated the law and sometimes pay a penalty or a fine. It's really something that any and everyone should avoid.
Could people just pay money and have it go away?
Yeah, like, is it like a speeding ticket? Can I just give $75 and call it a day?
Well, I'm assuming that it's more than 75.
Well, I want to know that. Like, why do I care? Like, well, I don't want to assume. Yeah. That makes that smelly thing out of you and me. So what is
yeah.
it?
Yeah. So the answer is no. And, you know, again, as you said, when we first started off, I was at the Attorney General's office for a decade, and it's an office with a lot of integrity. There's no such thing as like things getting swept under the rug or no. If you did something wrong and they launched an investigation and they found that there was wrongdoing, they will ask for this type of agreement. You'll have to sign it. You'll have to pay a fine that they deem to be appropriate. And, you know, it's not a great experience.
So,
and again, yeah.
Erica, can you just spitball in range of numbers, though? Are we talking in the hundreds and the thousands and the tens of thousands and the hundreds of thousands? What are we talking about? Let's assume, and maybe it matters of what type of project I'm doing. Let's assume I'm doing a $5 million project and approximately mm-hmm. that. And I get investigated, and I imagine I'm going to need attorneys to represent me in the investigation. I'm going to have to pay them. And as you said, this could take a year. And let's assume they find wrongdoing and I have to file this assurance of discontinuance. What am I looking at on a project of a scale of $5 million if I do it all wrong?
It can really vary.
What's the upside? The higher numbers? Like, are we?
There's no chart I can point to. What I can talk about is, you know, some numbers that have come out of the office consistently.
Okay.
For some activity that they deem to be technical violations of law, which it's potentially failing to file could be a technical violation. Oftentimes it's $3,000 per transaction. So if you had like, you know, a 20 unit building, they may assess $3,000 per unit.
Oh, that's per unit
unheard.
Though.
I just want to let you know that
3,000
listeners are saying, should I ask for forgiveness or permission?
Yeah, that's what we're trying to get at now. And so beyond paying this, as we were just saying, on the 20 unit building of $3,000, and you're not being held to that, you're just giving us, that's the type of thing that comes out. And besides,
it's very common.
Yeah, very common. Besides talking about the $60,000, are you going to have to then file the syndication filing?
Yes.
So you're going to have that cost anyway?
Yes.
So there's a penalty on top of, because one of the biggest reasons I hear people telling me they don't want to do this is the cost of doing the syndication filing in the first place.
Yep, I hear that too. And as I try to explain to groups that come to me, and I'm working with a very small group right now, 10 acquaintances that are, again, they want to pool their money, they want to build an intentional community in upstate New York, they want it ultimately to become a condominium. And we went through this whole analysis. They're always bummed out when they hear about this. But as I explain to them, we can work together for maybe a month or two. I can get everything squared away for you. I'll set up your LLC. We'll do your syndication filing. Everything will be ironclad, tight. If a lender asks for it, you're great. If a contractor, a really savvy contractor asks, you're great. If you don't do this and you come back to me a year from now, we will likely be working together for a year. And as I unfortunately say, there's no such thing as flat fees or discounts when you get into trouble.
That's so true.
It's very expensive to get in trouble. Whereas getting into compliance from day one is actually more cost effective and efficient. And then you can, you know, you're just in a better position all around. So I'm a firm believer, even though I do feel like sometimes these requirements can be really, really burdensome. And especially for these, you know, really innovative small groups, or again, group of friends or colleagues that want to do these really great intentional communities, or, you know, small investments, you know, mom and pop investors. It's just the hands down, it makes more sense to do everything right from the beginning.
Just to rewind, so everyone that's joining us now knows, we're talking to Erica Buckley, who's the practice lead for cooperatives and condominiums at the law firm of Nixon Peabody. She's actually the former chief of the Real Estate Finance Bureau at the New York State Attorney General's office. And she's telling us about what happens when you're a group, even a small group of 10 people that are trying to pull your money together. You're trying to build something. You're trying to develop. And you're saying to yourself, maybe you're doing a condo, maybe you're doing a co-op. And you say to yourself, laws, schmaws. And Erica just used a word. She said, it's burdensome. But I want you to realize Erica didn't make it burdensome. I didn't make it burdensome. Lauren didn't. It's the law. We talk about on this show a lot, you can run for office or lobby to change laws, but when laws are laws, you have to respect the laws. And what Erica is telling us, you don't do it the right way. Something comes out. Something gets to the attorney general. You can have this investigation. As she said, it's going to take a month or two if you're going to be doing it the right way. It's going to be taking over a year if we're doing an investigation. And what I'm hearing is billable hours to your attorney that entire time. Then she gave an example. She says, hey, if you had a 20-unit property, you could be thinking something like $60,000 in fines and penalties. And by the way, you'd still have to make the filing. But Erica, you said something interesting a little while ago that I want to loop back on. You said if it was a smaller group, there's these ways around this, like you use the example of my LoopNet listing, and you said something called a no action letter. Can you go into that a little for me?
Sure, absolutely. So the New York Syndicate Act does, the Attorney General has laid out a number of what we call either exemptions from having to do that full-blown prospectus filing, as well as no filing letters. So let's say, for example, your LoopNet listing, that, you know, investor was really looking to get an additional 5 investors into the deal. Maybe it was 4. There was, you said something about a 25% interest. So maybe that person's looking, you know, to have a group of 4 people invest in the property.
Okay.
So in that scenario, there is what's called Policy Statement 105, where the Attorney General will essentially issue what's called a no filing letter, meaning that you're engaging in a participation interest in New York State, which is technically governed under the Martin Act. But if you meet this requirement, one of which is a small group of investors, 9 or fewer, you actually don't have to do that registration. All you have to do is submit this affidavit, letting the Attorney General know, hey, I'm going to be engaging in this transaction. I'm going to be looking for 3 investors. There's going to be 4 of us. Here's the criteria. In most cases, it's either, you know, the person's sophisticated, they're an accredited investor as defined by the SEC, and, you know, you make that initial like 2-page affidavit filing to the AG's office, you get a no filing letter, you're in full compliance with the law. Versus the other possible scenario that we've been talking about is, you know, you put out that LoopNet listing, you try to get some people, deal goes south, person gets really upset, they file a complaint with the AG's office, they say, I was taken advantage of, I didn't understand the terms of the deal, no filing was made. That could be a really bad scenario for anyone. And that could be arguably avoided if you do this very simple filing with the Attorney General's office.
So I just want to make sure I'm understanding you correctly, though. I qualify for no action, but I fail to put in this 2-page affidavit approximately. And I don't get the no filing letter. I have just as much exposure as if I didn't qualify for the no action letter. Is that true? Like, I have to get this, I got to get this letter. This is, and that's the easiest, best way that a small investor should be proceeding, is seeing someone like Erica, an attorney that practices with the AG's office under the Martin Act, and getting this no action letter is like, it's a no-brainer.
It really is. And the other thing anyone that's listening should think about and realize is that the Martin Act is, again, we've talked about this at the beginning, it's like the strictest blue sky law in the country that regulates real estate. But the whole arena is a little murky. So there's nowhere in the statute where I can point that says, oh, this transaction is exempt. It doesn't at all fall under the Martin Act. It's all a matter of interpretation. There's some cases that can, you know, guide the AG's office, but at the end of the day, it is totally within the Attorney General's discretion to determine when something falls under the Martin Act. Is it a public offering? Is it a private offering? Is it a real investment? Is it not a real investment? It's all discretionary.
Is the Attorney General the judge and jury here too, or is this something else that you can end up in a lawsuit against the Attorney General?
Well, it is important to know that there is no private right of action under the Martin Act. So violations related to, you know, potential violation of the Martin Act, only the AG gets to adjudicate those cases.
So in English, just to be clear, in English, I'm an investor. I invest with Lauren because she's a big mucha mucha. And I go to myself, I'm going to invest with Lauren. She does this all the time. And I get burned. And I say, I lost my investment. She did it wrong. And I go to sue her. You're telling me I can't sue her under the Martin Act. The only person that could sue her is the Attorney General of the state of New York. That's correct, right? Yes.
For Martin Act violations, that's 100% correct.
And just to be clear on while we're on the radio right now, is that if she did a common law fraud or something like that to me, I could still sue her. We're just talking about it for a pure Martin Act violation, correct?
Right. And the way to think about it is, but for the Martin Act, this violation wouldn't exist. And I will tell you, there's the whole area of Martin Act preemption is yet again another very, very complicated area of law. So if your issue is, hey, they should have filed a prospectus and they didn't, I think it's pretty safe to say that that is a Martin Act claim that only the AG can adjudicate. If it was, hey, you got an offering plan and maybe something was missing or wrong, I will tell you, a lot of times private parties will try to claim breach of contract. Common law fraud, as everyone knows, you have to prove intent. That's a very, very difficult claim to prove because intent oftentimes is difficult to prove. But let's face it, no one wants to be in litigation over these types of issues anyway. So, you know, it just, you know, all roads are leading to getting into compliance for investors or promoters, as we want to call them, you know, people that are driving these opportunities. Including, you know, again, not only the group of friends or acquaintances that are looking to do the intentional community, or it could also be the person that put out that LoopNet ad that you're talking about. They're looking for other people to come and pool money. Well, it could be a bit of an issue if they don't do this filing.
So, Erica, let's go back to my story. I try to invest in Lauren. She did no prospectus. She was supposed to file a prospectus. I go to sue her. It gets dismissed because I don't have a right of action. How easy is it for me to then get the Attorney General to sue her?
Well, I mean, I will tell you that the AG has full prosecutorial discretion. So they get to pick and choose which cases they think they should be involved with. But they're very active. I mean, the Attorney General's office has been very active for quite some time. So it's not a safe bet to say, the AG isn't going to care about this. It's only like three people. It's only a little bit of money. You know, and again, I do a lot of enforcement work. I love doing the regulatory filing work for my clients, but whether it's for better or worse, a big part of my practice is, again, working on government investigations. And the AG's office right now is involved with some matters that, quite frankly, I'm not sure I would have gotten involved with while I was there because I may have deemed them to have been too small or not important enough.
Well, Erica, nothing about what Lauren did is too small to me. So what I'm going to do, They're going to boot us off the air for a commercial right now, is I'm going to make sure you stick with us. Erica Buckley, she's an attorney, the practice lead, co-ops and condos at Nixon Peabody. We're discussing how to pool money to do real estate invest in syndications. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Have you ever dreamed of owning a rental property, flipping a home, opening a successful business? This is Real Estate Investing with Andrew Lieb.